Good afternoon. Allow me just a word. Since I had the honor and the pleasure to welcome you at the very beginning of the conference, allow me to say also goodbye, because, well, the director of the chair will say the last word at the final moment of the conference. But because of my political commitment as a member of the European Parliament, I have to leave in, soon, so that I will not be able to be here when you go. So that I just wish to say you thank you very much for being here. This has been a great conference, we are extremely happy, and we will keep a permanent good memory of your presence here and of this conference. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Good afternoon. The first speaker of this afternoon is Francesc Torredeflot. He is professor and researcher of the Study Center of Wisdom, Traditions, and director of the UNESCO Association for the Interreligious Dialogue, and he will give a speech entitled Interfaith and Atheistic Spirituality in Raimon Panica. Thank you.
First of all, I want to apologize because my English is not so fluent, and then I will try my better. The first point is secular and atheistic spirituality. Panikkar's spirituality is, of course, his own personal spirituality, but it is not different from the spirituality he has promoted all his life through his thought and writings, especially since 1965. He is not a representative of any school nor of any particular religious tradition. He is only a unique and a special witness to a very interesting journey. Every life is a unique and unrepeatable spiritual way. Panikkar's philosophical and theological knowledge and his intercultural and interreligious life and works allowed him to find new approaches and new answers unexplored up to then. His path can draw for every one of us a very large landscape of human wisdom. And his outlook included humanist and atheistic spiritual tradition on a backdrop of an interreligious spirituality. So his spirituality is a deep koan for believers and non-believers, for faith and non-religious convictions, for intercultural, interreligious, and interconvictional dialogue. In spite of the recent strategic use of the word spirituality by some religious institutions, the truth is that spirituality has become more and more emancipated from religion. This process has developed into a highly fertile source of spiritual pluralism, a pluralism that includes atheistic approaches. In the 19th and 20th centuries, we could already find some appreciation of the spiritual dimension of human being in atheistic environments. In addition, religious traditions have become little by little more and more secular and free, free especially of any kind of priesthood and institutional mediation. This position has even allowed some theologians to consider the so-called masters of suspicion a kind of prophets and their narrative a theological locus as interesting for theologians as tradition or even as the Bible. Secular spirituality can bring together spirit and humanism with tolerance, something very close to what Johann Galtung called soft religion. For this reason, it is interesting to emphasize the mutual rapprochement and even convergence between atheistic spirituality and lay or secular spiritual people coming from or even staying inside religion, especially if we underline that in most cases the first ones are historically the result of the second ones. In this sense, emancipatory evolution of the world towards God's absence lays the ground for a changing image of or concept of God having his power in his own weakness. In any case, secular spirituality is not only the result of overcoming priesthood or the personal concept of God, but mainly of giving up static belief and institutions that make the rich, free, dynamic, and creative spirituality of our new humankind difficult, if not impossible. Secular or atheistic spirituality displays four typical traits. Firstly, the acceptance of the centrality and freedom of humankind, Feuerbach and Marx. Secondly, the culture of will in front of the misery of a humankind that was too lazy and shy to live and to be divine, Nietzsche. Thirdly, the contemplation of the harmonic mystery of the world. And finally, also the development of critical spirit, understood, of course, as rational analysis, denunciation, and solidarity, but also as an attempt to be honest to through Russell. It's like a spiritual humanism or a humanistic spirituality, Comte Sponville. The second point of my speech is an interfaith spirituality. It is indeed important for us to know if Panikkar's life and his work allow us to label his spirituality as interfaith. His theology of religions was that of someone who is a mystic and a prophet at the same time. He loved freedom, and so he did not like to be under any framework, even under any philosophical or theological system. He was a free theologian. His interreligious thought was a reflection of his personal interfaith experience and biography. He did not easily distinguish, as other theologians do, between theology and philosophy. So he did not separate theology, philosophy, and religious experience. This is one of the most important reasons for him to accept the Hindu experience of the non-dual unity of reality, Advaita. Taking this into account, I would prefer to call his theology of religions a wisdom of religions. Such a theologian becomes, in fact, a spiritual man. He goes as far as to suggest a sermon on the mount of interreligious dialogue. His wisdom of religion has its background in his cosmotheandric vision of reality. In fact, Advaita, cosmotheandric vision, or even Trinity are different ways to tell the same, or at least something equivalent. In an attempt to explain the interdependence of reality, to do so, he needs to recover myth to complete human reason. Panikkar states that cosmotheandrism, understood as three dimensions in mutual connection that make up reality, allows to understand and share the essential ideas of the majority of the world religions. As a Christian, he interprets cosmotheandrism from the outlook of the myths of Christ and Trinity, but he feels it is the right way to grasp mystical experience or the fullness of religious experience. This awareness is the common purpose of all human beings, whatever their religion. Panikkar had a true aspiration to put in relation or to integrate reality, religions, and humankind. Panikkar shows that the spiritual path can be described as a process and a dialogue inside the human being, which leads to his inner harmony through the experience of non-dual unity. As Martin Velasco underlines, it seems very obvious that Panikkar has suggested with his permanent disposition to find analogies between different levels and fields of life, a very close relationship between harmony in reality and in the human being and harmony among religions. His interreligious spirituality is indeed founded on his own interreligious dialogue or experience and the interreligious dialogue of every religious tradition with its own hidden essence, where the otherness appears as itself. This proposal was the result of his own experience, but also of his close relationship with his spiritual French Indian friends, Jules Monchanin and Henri Lesseau. Christ was the symbolic center and fullness of mystery, of interreligious dialogue, and of his theology of religions, because it could explain the non-dual relationship among religions, or even more, the essential unity of religions. For Christians, this symbol was shown through Jesus. Panikkar stated that any human being had a common human nature coming from Christ. So every man is a Christophany that allows him to go beyond any separation. Christ is much more than Jesus, who is the last form of Christ for Christians, but only for Christians. So he avoids the traditional limit of Christian theology, its iconolatry, with the two symptoms of historicity and humanity. At any rate, the name is not so important because he accepts that there are different homeomorphic equivalents according to every religion or spirituality or even conviction, as for instance Ishvara in the Sanatana Dharma or Hinduism. The symbol of Christ can show very well the process that every religion should follow in order to attain salvation, liberation, or fullness, because this symbol uses the death-resurrection model to express change and conversion. We do not forget that Panikkar tries to preserve his orthodoxy, in putting together universal salvation and Christ. But we feel that the key issue is the meaning of Christ. In generously extending it, he was able to include all the religious traditions without risking his own will to keep his Roman Catholic Orthodoxy and communion. At this point, I would like to share that I asked him several times why he tried so hard to preserve his Orthodoxy, given his wide freedom of spirit. I must admit, he never frankly answered my question. The only thing I recall is that he frequently emphasized he wanted to die inside ecclesial communion. In Panikkar's approach, religions appear not as a supplement of Christianity, but as a complement. So any ethnocentrism, even the Abrahamic one, is refused in order to allow for the diatopic hermeneutics suitable for Panikkar's dialogical dialogue. This has not prevented that in some of his writings, he talked about an only Catholic universal religion with the only priority of love, the only priority of love, and not necessarily identified with the Roman Catholic Church. Panikkar feels that intra-religious dialogue makes a reciprocal mystical fertilization among religions possible. This fertilization includes confidence and mystical respect for otherness, mystical awareness of ineffability, and a critical acceptance or even conversion brought about by the other. This is the meaning of a new religious pluralism. A new anthropology, no, the proposal of this pluralism is the pluralism of the alios, who allows and opens the door to a positive and humanistic vision of atheistic spirituality. In fact, Panikkar establishes a direct correspondence between pluralism, otherness, and dialogical dialogue, which is the type of dialogue he suggests as an alternative to dialectical dialogue, always limited by conflict and opposition without solution. The most interesting aspect for us is that Panikkar states that there is no dialogical spirit without openness to transcendence, and in some way, to be open to transcendence is to be dialogical. There is an encounter and a unity produced in the center of each religion, where a conciliatory synthesis in the cosmoteandric harmony happens, thanks to the loving knowledge which he calls faith. The same encounter itself is an existential and religious event. So the experience of dialogue becomes a spiritual experience in itself. The third point is inclusivity and pluralism of radical relativity. In Raymond Panikkar's work, we easily realize that his spirituality was interreligious and that it was related to dialogical dialogue. Dialogical dialogue, as proposed by Panikkar, allows partners to venture together into the unknown. This process includes the inner dialogue, in example, spiritual dialogue. Any dialogue with the secularist or with the atheist observes the trust that there may be a secular or an atheistic spirituality. Panikkar believed in secular spirituality, even if he didn't say much about it. Of course, a Catholic priest who accepts a secular spirituality can do it because he has inherited a particular tradition, but has liberated himself from its resultant ideology. Panikkar's approach to secular spirituality developed from the perspective of his Christian engagement without any kind of epoche or alleged neutrality. It is only through an empathetic approach that you can discover and take advantage of the experience of the other. Nevertheless, we should acknowledge that skepticism and indifferences contributed to his tolerance. Even we could assess that these were perhaps some of the most important purposes of atheistic thought, although they did not mean necessarily relativism, but radical relativity. Panikkar didn't like what he called the tyranny of labels. His definition of pluralism allows himself to be open to an atheistic or even to a secular spirituality as long as its explanation was not closed. Pluralism means the relativity of all convictions. Panikkar's life shows a man with a dynamic identity, or perhaps with a diverse or complex identity. He used it to say that there was a dialogue, certainly a dialogical one, within himself between Christianity, Hinduism, Buddhism, and secularity. But at this point, it is interesting to emphasize that he didn't have a multiple identity, but an identity who had been able to integrate in a personal balanced harmony different and relevant aspects of some traditions. Identity is a question of the heart, where acceptance and freedom are key, but also a question of the mind. And then the pluralist attitude is the kernel to find the personal right way to bring together doctrines which can apparently appear as irreconcilable. The ideas of man, reality, and God are not transparent. They are open. They are open to freedom, and this freedom is the ground of pluralism. The next point is contribution of secular experience to human spirituality. Panikkar underlines that one of the main contributions to a new humankind is the autonomy of the secular age that asks for a conversion of religious people to the world and its values. The temporal universe is real and positive, and so not to be transcended. He thinks that the autonomic attitude tells the secular man that nothing is more sacred than the secular reality. This is a quote. So the secular man should be useful to this world, showing the human inner wish towards everything beyond himself, everything that achieves the supreme human condition. This means that secular spirituality represents the sacramental structure of reality, because there is an awareness that human life is the very expression of the mystery of the existence. Panikkar felt that after a first moment, which was cosmocentric, and a second one, theocentric, humankind witnesses a third, which is anthropocentric and secular. He thought that only Buddhism would be able to harmonize and to reconcile all these dimensions. Buddha is perhaps the most far-sighted wise man, because he thinks that only an atheistic religion can really be a religion, because it is not idolatry. However, at the same time, as Panikkar underlines, words, even the adjective atheistic, are always inadequate. Buddhism, as an atheistic religion, shows a religion without God preached by Buddha, whereas contemporary atheism shows a no God as basis of religion. This contemporary atheism is one of the periods in human history which can be more clearly assimilated to a tangible sign of an anthropological change in a sort of biological mutation. Something that transcends is not already outside the human being, but its own reason, but in its own reason, in its humanity, in its society, and so on. At any rate, humankind continues to need some kind of transcendence. God is not dead, but he, it, has been nearly assimilated by humankind. Paniker considers the denial of God as a result of the secular development of the essential Christian ritual, which in fact is like a sublimation of God from a solid state to a gaseous one, a kind of mystic dimension. In fact, nothing can explain reality, not even humankind. Paniker talks about religion, atheism, giving the adjective religious the meaning of last and radical attitude, beyond any ideology or philosophy. Nevertheless, this doesn't mean that any atheism is put on the same level as theistic religions. It is an atheism which saves man from transcendence, superstition, and even from credulity of science. At this point, Paniker quotes, without commenting, Nietzsche's poem to the unknown God. So Paniker feels that the issue is going beyond the negation of God, asserting at the same time that there is no man. This is, to that effect, a big mutation in the awareness of humankind, which is going to be accomplished. This deep and untold experience of the contemporary man cannot be explained with the terms pantheism, atheism, nor theism. Perhaps the only way to say something appropriate is to talk of no center. This new atheism, as Paniker said, underlines that reality should not be manipulated. Paniker even dares to say that Buddha somehow accepts the God of the poor, while denying the God of philosophers and theologians. Maybe in the same way as Western theologians did with the concept of the death of God. Buddha is not an agnostic, but he tries to find an answer which can release us from need, and then he offers us silence as the improvement of any answer, because the question itself is rolled up. The philosophical science, the silence about God, shows that God is nothing. Even beyond the ultimate reality. To silence men is not to harm them, but to set them free. Some people could think that talking about atheistic spirituality in Paniker's thought is too bold. Nevertheless, Paniker has a dynamic idea of religion and spirituality. There is some kind of syncretistic or even eclectic relationship between religion and atheism, where religion and atheism grow up and disappear together. The next point is Paniker's approach to atheism as an open spirituality. The engagement of Panikkar with secular thought is very coherent with the process of his life and thought. He felt that there should not be a separation between sacred and secular. Perhaps Panikkar atheistic spirituality is just the silence about God, because God, whether or not it exists, is beyond language, but also beyond our thought and our will. Panikkar felt that the problem of God was a global human question, but at the same time a personal question. Even if it is true that apophatism is important in the history of and origins of the theology of the death of God, apophatism, understood as the religious belief that God cannot be known because he is completely other and must be described in negative terms, is not atheism. Panikkar suggests that the role of theology should be to reveal God, a God who is pure relation, who is not the other nor his own self. For this reason, we should give up God, live like we should do with any other kind of support. Atheism and atheistic spirituality become then a way to experience reality beyond God. Mystical experience is to be open to full reality, a full experience, a novum related to a new awareness of sacred secularity, but always in a simple human being, not superior. Mystical experience is the experience of fullness, even if partially. It has a close relationship with all that is human. God and divinity are, in their ultimate meaning, empty concepts, because they cannot explain the object they try to refer to. One of the most important problems concerning the theistic narrative is that it reflects, even if inadvertently, the will to speak of a personal identity who is named God. This attempt is not enough. Divinity or reality is still limited in some way. From this perspective, Panikkar's approach to Buddhism allows himself to assert that the highest religion is the atheistic one. Although Buddha does not reject reality, he denies any name, especially any anthropomorphic personification, to describe it. So he does not accept theism because he wants to preserve the absoluteness of reality, but at the same time he does not support anti-theism, which is unfortunately the nature of the majority of atheistic classical positions. In fact, Panikkar notes that Buddha declares himself equally far from both ends. Eternalism, that takes into account the existence of the Atman, and nihilism, that considers there is no Atman. If reality is ineffable, it is such everywhere. Buddhism is a silent road, and so are the tools that can be found to go along its spiritual path, because it goes beyond the identity between being and thought. Being does not explain reality. This is sometimes the main reason of the misunderstanding of Buddhist atheism. If you expect to go beyond being, you should also transcend logos. Reality is free, and so it is not limited by any law. Even if this one is a result of the Western identity between being and thought that has allowed science to become an apparently all-powerful technoscience. The next point is the Catalan contribution to atheistic spirituality, Panikkar's and Corbyn's thought. Catalonia is a very particular place in Europe, one of the most secularized areas in the world. Only 12% of the Catalan population goes regularly once a week to a place of worship, and only 8.7% of people declare they would like to go there more frequently. In spite of this context, there is a great dynamism in the field of interreligious and interconvictional dialogue. And the leading figure of Raymond Panikkar has played a very decisive role on it. So, the current most important organization of interreligious dialogue in Spain, the UNESCO Association for Interreligious Dialogue, was born out of his suggestion in 1997. He also played a very important role in the successful organization of the 2004 Parliament of World Religions, where he was the co-chair of local program. As a result of this parliament, the UNESCO Association for Interreligious Dialogue created the Catalan Network of Entities of Interreligious Dialogue, which currently brings together more than 20 interfaith organizations in all the Catalan cultural area. Panikkar is the most inspiring philosophical and theological figure of this Catalan interreligious movement. In addition, his friendship with Federico Mayor Zaragoza, former UNESCO's Director General, and with Félix Martí, founder and former director of the UNESCO Center of Catalonia, where Audir was initially sheltered, allowed the interreligious Catalan movement to preserve Panikkar's secular approach. This made it possible to develop several interconvictional initiatives which were inclusive of non-believers. This inclusive outlook has been progressively confirmed by UNESCO, by other United Nations agencies, and by the Council of Europe. Unfortunately, it is difficult for some Catalan religious and political authorities, especially for those with a close relationship with the Catholic religious majority, to accept this new and very inclusive approach. Panikkar is not alone. I think that it is important to underline the close relationship between Panikkar's thought and the thought of Maria Corby, who is a very remarkable Catalan epistemologist. This relation has not been explored by commentators, but I can share that in a conversation with Panikkar, he said that he really admired the work of Corby on non-religious spirituality. He even suggested the translation into German of some of his works, and he thought that the book Religion Without Religion, in particular, would be highly appreciated in Germany. In this work, Corby explains that in our cultural circumstances, we should separate the different aspects unified in the mythic version of religion. This way, the authentic religious experience would deeply influence our life, but it would not solve anything concrete, because it would be absolute or undetermined and not relative or determined. In the past, when religion carried out some useful social functions in order to prevent conflicts and to keep together people in industrial, in pre-industrial societies through through submission, religion played a very concrete and relative role. Of course, Panikkar and Corby did not agree on the approach to science and technology, because Panikkar's skepticism is far from Corby's positive assessment, provided both science and technology are guided by an epistemological collective project outlined from the point of view of what he calls deep human quality. This is the secular expression he suggests to replace the term spirituality. They have tried to experience it and offer it the most valuable spiritual gifts of religious masters and sacred texts. Concerning their attitude towards atheistic spirituality, I feel myself a disciple of the sacred marriage between these two Catalan contemporary wise men. Their common priority is to place spirituality, or after Corby's expression, deep human quality, above any belief, any dogma, any right, any moral precept, and especially above any religious institution. Both have acknowledged that this spirituality can be found in the sacred texts and in the life and writings of wise men. Certainly, Panikkar thought that this spiritual experience can be experienced anywhere and in any human condition, but that in the end, religious institutions had been able to preserve it until today, and could continue to do so if they were able to change and become freer and turn around the spiritual axis. On the other hand, Corby thinks that in current and future knowledge societies, only deep human quality or spirituality can survive, because continuous change and innovation in science and technology, as well as in other fields, cannot afford the luxury of any static structure and belief. Corby asserts that spirituality emerges from the collective and personal necessity of a living being who has a double access to reality. He feels that in this context, any human being should cultivate deep human quality in order to guarantee his own survival and that of the planets. Nowadays, we face a new challenge. It is not only a new wine in old wineskins, but a wine in a continuously changing wineskin. Consequences for interreligious spirituality. I don't know if I have time or not. I leave it here. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that challenging and inspiring address. I suppose the question, a specific question in a way, if atheism can be equated with a homeomorphic equivalent of religion or whatever, I'm just wondering about the mystical experience. And I'm asking it in terms of, we recognize that mysticism is experienced across the religious traditions. And in fact, I also read a paper with an Indigenous Australian lady, Auntie Joan Hendricks, arguing that there's a basic mystical experience of unity with the cosmos, with the earth, that's integral to Indigenous peoples. So I'm just wondering, I just never thought of the question before until your paper today, but like, is there a possibility of a mystical atheistic experience as distinct from a mystical non-theistic as Buddhist experience, which I think is also very possible, obviously, but from a secular atheistic position, is there a possibility of a mystical experience? Thank you.
For me, of course, it's possible an atheistic spirituality, an atheistic mystical experience is possible. I'm not the only to tell that, to say that. I don't know if you know André Comtes Pombil, which is a French philosopher. He has been translated to English and to Spanish and to more than 10 languages, and he explains how his personal experience as an atheistic man is a mystical experience, and even he makes a narrative very similar to the conversion of Saint Augustinus, Hippona. And it's very interesting to read this one. Unfortunately, I don't have here the translation in English, but it's very interesting to read. And if the atheistic people tell they have a mystical experience, of course, I can refuse that.
Thank you, Tor de Vlot, for this wonderful, very, very important topic for at least two reasons, at least maybe more than two. One is, of course, as you point out, the complex evolution of Ramon Panikkar. And it'll be interesting to know, you probably know already, that his Gifford lectures, which he gave in 1989, were called Trinity and Atheism, The Dwelling of the Divine in the Modern World. The title got changed later on, but that was the original title. So, and then he and Paul Ricoeur had many debates on this question as well. And then the other side, of course, is what you point out about Catalonia, and in fact also in the United States, a lot of people who identify themselves as spiritual in contrast to being religious. So the question becomes one of some clarity, otherwise and it's very important to have that clarity, because this is, as you intimate, new territory, not only in Catalonia, but certainly in other parts of the world as well. Let me at least start by making two points. One, it seems to me, in the interest of clarity, that there is a big difference between the atheism of someone like Bertrand Russell or Friedrich Nietzsche and the atheism of someone like Ramon Panikkar, all right? And I would classify the atheism of Panikkar as an atheism within religion, going through the religious idea, which is, of course, not new to Ramon. Meister Eckhart and others have also seen the idea that there are dangers of projection, anthropomorphizing God and superstition and so on. And of course, Ramon was quite aware of that. But someone like Bertrand Russell or Nietzsche is more problematic, who had no sense of religious dialectics. So to give you on Ramon's point, he was very particular about his religious practice. Milena will tell you how every noon, without fail, he would say the Angelus, all right? So whatever his connection with the Roman Catholic Communion, certainly spiritual practice, his daily meditations, the daily Angelus, etc., were extremely important in a way in which I'm not sure that Bertrand Russell would say the Angelus, all right? So it would have been a very good idea. It would have improved his logic. Terry, I think you would agree, right? But anyway, there's a difference between, I would say, an atheism within religion, going through this religious evolution, and a religion that is without religion. So the first I would call, the second rather, without religion, I would call a reductive atheism, as against a, if you more, a more transcendent atheism, which is how I would define Raimond's atheism. And the same thing is true about the secular sacred dialectic, because when Raimond said he was talking about a secular spirituality or a sacred secularity, he was not fudging or reducing the difference between the sacred and the spiritual. The Angelus still had a very special place, such that he would drop his activities and attend to the Angelus with full attention, all right, even in the midst of his writing and so on. So it meant that it had, even in his life, a very special quality, which, again, the ardual idea or the non-dual idea is important, that it's not that the differences between the sacred and the secular disappear or vanish, but that they are very closely connected. And so that was his corrective to the Catholic Church and the Catholic tradition that was withdrawing from the world. And of course, Raimond completely disagreed with that, and as you correctly point out, sided with the secularists, that we have to engage the world of social reality so that we can, in some sense, provide some compassion, some alleviation for the world's sufferings, and that the idea of a monkish withdrawal was a completely medieval and wrong idea. So my point is that it's very important to distinguish these two kinds of atheism and these two kinds of secularism. Otherwise, we will really confuse the issue. That's one question. And the second question then follows from that point, that following on the idea that Panikkar for a long time was interested in atheism as a spiritual reality, right? Because he was thinking that in evolutionary terms, humankind had perhaps moved beyond the idea of theism. And of course, his dialogue with non-Christian religions, Taoism and Buddhism and others, which do not operate with the notion of God, suggested other forms of transcendence that he was very open to in his cross-cultural dialogue. So in the Rhythm of Being, where of course he opens the space, which of course Corby and others are probably very interested in. He opens the space of saying, well, it's not just the Chinese and the Japanese and others who have to wrestle with the idea of a non-theistic transcendent. Maybe even the West is ready for a non-theistic transcendence. But I think it's important to keep in mind what I said in my first point, that this new exploration, this new adventure for the West presupposed a certain religious evolution and would not have gone along with the reductive secularism of a Bertrand Russell or a Nietzsche, because that's a completely different, and I think Raimond had knew the masters of suspicion very well, but he had, I think, he learned from them, obviously, because obviously they were very great thinkers, Feuerbach, Marx, Nietzsche, Freud, and so on. But he had an answer to them, as indeed many people do, and I think it's wrong to equate the two kinds of atheism and the two kinds of secularism.
Mm-hmm. Partially, I agree with you, partially. But the problem is always the same with in hermeneutics, in social sciences. What's the meaning of words? Of words, a word has, sometimes we have a polysemic meaning, and it's very difficult to know how to distinguish sometimes. I agree with you, it's not the same, but it's not different. No. But it's not different. I can explain you, for example, I know very well the atheistic organizations in Catalonia. And they have experimented, they have changed a little bit in the last years. Some years ago, for example, 15 years ago, they don't accept spirituality. Right now, nowadays, they accept spirituality. They have changed. And they can change, I suppose. Because if we can talk about religious diversity inside the same tradition, even in the same school of a tradition, there is an evolution, then we should accept that atheistic people can change. And of course, when I read Nietzsche, for me, Nietzsche is a spiritual teacher, for me. Then it's different from the perspective of Paniker perspective. I agree with you, but Paniker likes Nietzsche also, and he learns from him. This is my intention in this speech, especially because we have, for example, I am Catholic from the Catholic tradition. I know there are some Protestant theologians. They have taken advantage of the masters of suspicion in order to purify his own theology. It's great. It's wonderful. I think so. So it's interesting. In Barcelona, there are right now courses about open courses about atheistic spirituality, and there are a lot of people there. And there are some people who tell, "Oh, listen, it's wonderful. After 20 years, there are someone who has realized we are also spiritual." Of course, they don't need church, but in my opinion, perhaps religions will need more every time churches can disappear in next years. It's not possible, perhaps not, perhaps yes, we don't know. There are, in the field of religion, there are a lot of changes. There are mutations, desplazamientos, no sé cómo se dicen, displacement.
Thank you for this thought-provoking presentation. Just to make 2 points, one from the Trinity and religious experience, Paniker speaks about, you know, Trinity and how Father does not exist. God the Father does not, is because of the self-emptying, the constant self-emptying, the Father does not have his existence. That's what Paniker speaks about. And that doesn't mean, you know, any atheistic approach, but also in cosmotheandric vision, the divine dimension is an inescapable reality, and it is not imposed, but it is the inescapable dimension or inseparable dimension of every reality, which you pointed out. Every reality is a manifestation of Christ or Christophany. That's what Paniker said. Thank you.
Thanks. Trinitarian, I think the atheistic spirituality is also Trinitarian, because Trinity is an invariant, an human invariant. So why not? And afterwards, I have concerning also the religious experience. I have some libertarian friends, and they tell that we are also spirituals, and our spirituality is not to obey anyone. And I think this is also a Trinitarian experience, not to obey anyone. because usually when if you want to disturb to distract a spiritual experience, make someone to be submitted, and a spiritual experience is finished. So it's the big problem with a lot of religious people who is inside some religious institutions with a very hard and powerful structure of submission. But it's my opinion. Eh?
It's difficult to say what I want to say now without hurting people. I think meaning comes from context. Now the example, his famous example is this, the father does not exist, is a specific context, a symbolic language and so on. But now when we speak of atheism, Buddhism, it's really mixing up everything. It's like saying Christ, the Buddha does not exist in Christianity. I don't know how you can do this. Trying to understand one religion. I hope you'll understand me then better. But I'm saying, why do you bring in non-God atheism into Buddhism? Try to understand Buddhism in its own context, in its own experience. And even with Panikkar, I found the same thing. Talking to Hindus and so on, Christ came in. With Hans-Peter Dürer, the scientist, and Dürer insisted, I don't understand your Christ, I don't need your Christ. He insists. And Panikkar was insisting that Christ is important. Of course it's important for you, but in our dialogue. What I'm saying is, in our context, we must adjust. Now when you say, when talking to non-believers, that means for you, you still have non-believers who don't accept your terminology. Can people exist without believing? You know, Panikkar in this dialogue with Dürer begins by defining religion as Verbundenheit, Verbindung, connection, interconnection, a definition he gave long ago. In that sense, everybody is living on Verbindung, connection. Because those who connect, interconnect, they are believing in that famous thing of Sarvam Sarvatmaka. So, if we don't abide by the language games, we are coming back to Babylon, I feel. And then the dialogue work starts. How do you connect with each other? I am not saying all religions are equal. I'm not saying give up your religions. But bridges of understanding have to be built on that thing, by not giving up our specificities. There's the difficulty. But goodwill alone is not enough here. So it's a difficult task because I'm involved in this. But if I come with my Christian background and talk to the Hindus about this, the death and resurrection of Jesus, I make no headway. I have to make an effort to understand the negativity of suffering in the Hindu worldview, rebirth, samsara, and moksha. But if I say this is nonsense, he turns around and says, your resurrection is equally nonsense. I'm not saying he's right or I'm right, but I'm only saying there's a problem of mutual understanding. And what I'm announcing in my religion and he's announcing, there are two different worlds. And understanding is a complicated process. And trying to make us understand each other is not easy. And Panika always insisted this requires purity of heart, clarity of mind. And he was very adamant about purity of heart. It's not an intellectual game, purity of heart.
I am fairly certain that Raimon came to the place where he said that Christianity is not a theistic religion, but rather a Trinitarian religion. And I think he clearly made that distinction in several places. And I also second his interpretation, Francis de Sales' interpretation, or Raimon's, of religion as religare, to reconnect those connections between us, those links between us. He goes back to the etymology. And another teaching that he had that I think is helpful here is also, back in Santa Barbara, he would say a phenomenological description of religion as that journey from a starting point A to whatever you see, the classless society, if that's the, or money for capitalism, perhaps, or the future, that journey is the description of religion that makes sense. We're on a journey, and some people see that ultimate reality, that point B, very, very differently. Nirvana, heaven. And so to think about our journeys, you know, go to people, where are we and where are we going, and listen carefully to their description of where we are as human beings and our vision, my cultural vision, my religious vision of where I'm going. And I think that helps us listen to our stories, our understanding of what this journey is all about.
Thank you very much.